This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Joe Biden and other top U.S. officials have been stunned by the pace of the Taliban's nearly complete takeover of Afghanistan as a planned withdrawal of American forces urgently became a mission to ensure a safe evacuation. The speed of the Afghan government's collapse and the ensuing chaos posed the most serious test of the Biden administration and Biden as commander-in-chief, and he was a subject of withering criticism from those who said that he had failed. Biden campaigned as a seasoned expert in international relations and has spent months downplaying the prospect of an ascendant Taliban, while arguing that Americans of all political persuasions have tired of a 20-year war, a conflict that demonstrated the limits of money and military might to force the Western-style democracy on a society not ready or willing to embrace it. The death toll from a magnitude 7.2 earthquake in Haiti soared to at least 1,300 Sunday as rescuers raced to find survivors amid the rubble ahead of a potential deluge from an approaching tropical storm. Saturday's earthquake also left approximately 3,000 people injured in the Caribbean nation, with thousands more displaced from the destroyed or damaged homes. Survivors in some areas were forced to shelter in streets or soccer fields with their few salvaged belongings, while overloaded hospitals scrambled to help those who were injured. Yet the devastation could soon worsen with the coming of Tropical Depression Grace, which is predicted to reach Haiti on Monday night. The U.S. National Hurricane Center classified the tropical storm as a depression on Sunday. This is VOA News. Warning of tough days ahead with surging COVID-19 infections. The director of the National Institutes of Health said Sunday the U.S. could decide in the next couple of weeks whether to offer coronavirus booster shots to Americans this fall. Among the first to receive them could be healthcare workers, nursing home residents, and other older Americans. Dr. Francis Collins also pleaded anew for unvaccinated people to get their shots, calling them sitting ducks for a Delta variant that is ravaging the country and showing little signs of letting up. After a brutal wave of infections driven by the Delta variant, many Ugandans seeking a first dose of coronavirus vaccine are still competing with hundreds of thousands who have waited months for a second dose. The country now has only 285,000 shots donated by Norway. The Delta surge has touched off a vaccination rush across Africa that the slow trickle of donated doses cannot keep up with, compounding the continent's vaccine disadvantage compared with the rest of the world. The urgency to obtain a second dose across much of the world's least vaccinated continent contrasts sharply with rich countries now beginning to authorize their own doses in third waves. Days after the alarming warning of UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres that there was a code red for humanity, with global warming threatening to choke the planet, individuals are seeking to play their part. Some citizens have known this day would come for decades, and many have taken tiny individual steps to do their part. They include an urban shepherd keeping cemeteries clean and tidy with a flock of sheep in Belgium. Activists say actions by individuals may only be a tiny drop, but actions by millions of individuals can make a real difference, though governments will still have to step up in the fight against climate change. Japan marked the 76th anniversary of its surrender in World War II. At the somber ceremony, the Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga pledged for the tragedy of war to never be repeated, but he avoided apologizing for his country's aggression. In contrast, the Emperor expressed deep remorse over his country's wartime actions in a carefully nuanced speech. Also Sunday, Suga's predecessor, Shinzo Abe, and two ministers of Suga's cabinet prayed at the Yasukuni Shrine. It's a site viewed by China and the Koreas as a symbol of Japanese militarism. South Korea urged Japanese officials to show sincere remorse through action so that the countries could develop future-oriented ties. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Mbati in Washington. Today is Monday, August the 16th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zambians wait anxiously for final results of their presidential election.
As we stand now, opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema has just reached 2.1 million votes. He only needs 2,538,996 to secure the 50% plus one needed for a first round victory.
Nigeria's president condemns Saturday's killing of dozens of mostly Muslim travelers in Central Plateau State. A weekend fire destroys Liberia's only referral hospital near Monrovia. Cameroon's president aims to reactivate old militias. And Uganda's president blames what he calls lazy security personnel for torturing suspects.
When you respect the people of Uganda, you must observe the following. Don't beat people. Don't beat members of the public. Don't beat even criminals. You are not allowed to beat anybody, not even the children.
And Kenyans are warned of pending drought in coming months. Those stories plus Samson Omale Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zambians wait anxiously for final results as the country's Electoral Commission counts votes from the August 12 presidential and parliamentary elections. VOA's Peter Clotty in the capital Lusaka says judging from preliminary results, main opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema of the United Party for National Development, UPND, maintains its lead over incumbent President Edgar Lungu of the ruling Patriotic Front Party.
James, the situation for the past 2 or 3 days has been really tensed because people were anticipating that the Electoral Commission that has promised 72-hour window by which it would declare the result was a little hesitant or was a little bit overly careful to produce the certified result, which increased tension. However, they said they want to be careful, and because they were overwhelmed by the sheer number of voters who came out to vote, and turnout from the Electoral Commission shows that it was 72.3%, which is a very high number looking at the context of Zambian elections. So basically, it looks more like people came out massively to send a strong signal either to the incumbent president, Edgar Chagwa Lungu, or his main rival, Hakainde Hichilema.
What do you think is the trend of the preliminary results so far in terms of the parliamentary election results?
The parliamentary results appear to favor the main opposition, UPND. The UPND unconfirmed report showed a significant number of seats they have scooped from the ruling Patriotic Front Party.
Peter, there are reports that President Edgar Lungu has so far rejected some of the results announced by the Electoral Commission, but he is the incumbent. So what do you suppose are some of his reasons?
The ruling party general secretary, Mr. Muila, raised concerns about violence in some strongholds of the main opposition, which they said prevented some of their officials from appending their signature to the forms, which clearly defines who won at what polling stations. Some supporters of the ruling party are trying to call on the Electoral Commission to invalidate not only the polling station results where the violence occurred, but the entire province. The Electoral Commission at this time is giving regular updates about what is going on. But from the trend we are seeing, it seems to be going in favor of Hakainde Hichilema. As we stand now, opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema has just reached 2.1 million votes. He only needs 2,538,996 to secure the 50% plus one needed for a first round victory.
Peter, what are international observers saying about the conduct of the elections?
The African Union poll observer chief, in this case, former Sierra Leonean president Ernest Bai Koroma, when we spoke with him, said the polling stations he visited here in Lusaka He specifically asked the polling agents representing all the political parties if they had any problems with the processes being implemented as part of the effort to administer the elections, and they had no problems. Actually, they praised the efforts of the Electoral Commission to organize these elections.
Peter, thank you so much again. We look forward to speaking with you again.
Anytime, James, anytime.
That was VOA's Peter Clotis speaking with us from the Zambian capital, Lusaka, where he is covering that country's presidential election. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni has warned members of the security against violating the rights of people in their custody. The president says the issue of torturing suspects is caused by what he calls lazy officers who do not want to carry on thorough investigations. Mugumi Davis Rakari, Jane reports from Kampala.
When you respect the people of Uganda, you must observe the following. Don't bark at people. Don't beat people. Don't beat members of the public. Don't beat even criminals. You are not allowed to beat anybody, not even the children, because in the past there was beating of children. That one we rejected. If you beat children, we send you to jail.
Security and human rights took center stage during President Museveni's weekend address to the nation. He said it's old-fashioned for security personnel to beat torture suspected Ugandans.
Somebody can say, yes, please don't beat me, I admit. When in fact, he's not the one. But because of fearing beating, he just admits. It means that the real criminal is not arrested. He's somewhere, and he will commit more crimes. Confessions by criminals are not necessary. Lazy security people think that the criminal must admit. No, even if he doesn't admit, but you bring the facts, the court will convict him.
President Museveni said torturing civilians leaves a bad image for the government that he says is committed to promoting human rights. He said he had directed security personnel to always be lethal, humane, and strategic when dealing with demonstrators.
When it comes to crowds, e.g. demonstrations, I do not think that the members of the security forces should act individually. They should always act as a group, following the commands of the group leader, following the anti-riot procedures.
More than 50 people were killed in violent demonstrations last November in Kampala and neighboring areas following the arrest of then-opposition presidential candidate Robert Chagulanyi, also known as Bobi Wine. Rights activist Crispin Kaheru welcomed the president's address and called it timely.
There have been incidents of torture, abductions, and murders over the past period. Elements within security have been fingered for some of these. Many times, these acts have instilled unnecessary fear within the public. In some cases, lives have actually been lost. It is good that the president has come out to account and send a strong warning to the perpetrators of these criminal actions.
President Museveni also called on Ugandan courts to step up litigation for suspects instead of keeping them in detention for long. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
President Paul Biya of Cameroon has sent his top military officials and a governor to reactivate old militias and create new ones to combat terrorism on the Central African state's border with Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Mora, Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria.
About 30 people, most of them youths, sing in Mora that Boko Haram is a capricious terrorist group. The singers call for caution in all villages on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria, where they say jihadist groups have relaunched activity. Abdul Omar is coordinator of 9 militia groups fighting Boko Haram terrorism in Mora, a town on the border with Nigeria's Borno state. Nigeria says Borno is an epicenter of the jihadist group. Umar says the number of jihadists infiltrating villages in Mora within the past 3 months is increasing. Umar says militias that were discouraged by the lack of flashlights, motorcycles, telephones, bows and arrows, and guns to fight terrorists will now be able to resume work. He says besides moving through the bush and hills to inform the military of suspicious activities, militias are now expected to teach people not to accept gifts from unknown visitors. Umar spoke Saturday after receiving food, flashlights, motorcycles, and an undisclosed amounts of money from Cameroon's President Paul Biya. He said the militias expect more food and financial assistance from the state. Mijiyawa Bakari, governor of the far north region on the Nigerian border, led a delegation that included senior military officials to Mora. Bakari says Biya wants militias to be reactivated to stop terrorist incursions.
Chef d'etat.
Bakari says since May, when Boko Haram leader Abubakar Shekau was declared killed, the Islamic State in West Africa province or ISWAP has been very active along the Cameroon-Nigeria-Chad border. Bakari says Cameroon's militias should denounce jihadist groups and educate people to reject their teachings. He says if militias collaborate with government troops and state officials, the jihadist new modus operandi will be short-lived. Bakari promised more government support but did not say when the support will be given. He promised to visit all border towns to reactivate militias. In January, Cameroon's military said many militias complained of lack of government support and stopped helping government troops. Bakari said militias are active, though Boko Haram had been defeated. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Mora, Northern Cameroon.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Mbatha in Washington. Today is Monday, August 16th. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has condemned Saturday's killing of dozens of mostly Muslim travelers in Central Plateau State. The victims were said to be returning from a religious festival in neighboring Bauchi State. Galba Shehu is senior special assistant to President Buhari on media and publicity. He says the president has called for a thorough investigation that will bring the culprits to trial promptly and fairly, because Nigerians should be able to travel freely across the country without any form of molestation.
The president strongly condemns this attack on travelers from a religious event passing through Jos, the Plateau State capital, and regrets the deaths of, as we have said, about 22 persons, several others who have been injured. People must be free to travel across the country without any form of molestation. And this is not acceptable, and he has determined that there must be a thorough investigation that would bring the culprits to trial promptly and, of course, fairly, so that they will answer for their own crime.
The president has said that the killings were pre-arranged. Has he been informed as to who was behind the killings?
Well, we believe that an investigation would unveil who is behind these attacks. It is difficult to accept that the level of destruction and the killings arose from an opportunistic ambush. Certainly, people must have prepared for these things, must have procured the weapons they used in these attacks, and certainly more will be revealed as the investigation continues.
What about the claim, Shehu, attributed to local officials that the killings were carried out by a Christian militia?
There are various reports that are coming in from independent sources, from police, the military, and several other security agencies. I think that it is enough that normalcy is gradually being restored and that arrests have been made, 20 so far, in police detention, and we are sure that from the interrogation that they would undergo, the police would have a clear picture of who caused this mayhem.
Shehu, there are those who have been suggesting that the continuing ethnic and religious killings, as well as the violence perpetrated by Boko Haram, all of these indicate a country where insecurity reigns supreme. Your comment?
Like all other countries around the globe, we have our own share of criminality, and we are dealing with all of that, with all of the resources, human and material, that are available to our own country. There is no fairness or justice in anyone saying that criminality is prevailing in this country. Rather, government and our security forces are working day and night And I assure you that so much is being achieved in so many parts of the country. When new challenges arise, the important thing is to see how is the government reacting and how is it dealing with them.
Thank you so much, Shehu.
Thank you, James, for contacting us.
Galba Shehu is the senior special assistant to Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari on media and publicity. He was speaking with us from the capital, Abuja. In Liberia, the only government referral hospital in Magibi County near the capital, Monrovia, was gutted by fire during the morning hours of Sunday. The hospital's administrator says the fire was caused by an electrical shock. As Rita Jilabwe reports from Monrovia, inpatients have been transferred to other health facilities in the county.
According to the County Health Officer Augustine Fania, the fire started from the surgical theater and fast spread to other parts of the facility. Dr. Fania says patients were urgently transferred to other public and private health facilities in the county.
At 8 o'clock, there was electrical shock around the operating theater area that resulted into an outbreak of a fire that spread from the theater to the inpatient pharmacy and then got at the emergency room area and the administrative wing of the hospital. What we did was to put the patients on the ambulance and move them to nearby facilities.
Fania says there were several calls placed to the Liberia National Fire Service, Magibi Detachment, but there was no response, leaving area residents to fight the fire by themselves, resulting into many of them being injured.
The fire was caught up by the citizens from Kakata, people who came to put out the fire, but then because of the fire, had carbon monoxide poisoning and a heat stroke, and they were rushed by the ERO to our private facility where we attended to them.
Felicia Kwemba is the commander of Magibi County Fire Service Detachment. She says the agency could not respond in time because there is no fire truck in the area.
Fire service in Kakata, we don't have a fire truck here. So when it is heavy like today, we make call to our head office to help us. It is challenging. The traffic in town and the distance, it's not like thing that we just take 5 minutes or 10 minutes to get here.
Magibi County residents say there is no need to have a fire service in the county that is not equipped to provide services. Jerry Vanni, Magibi County Superintendent, says the situation has claimed the attention of the executive branch of government. He says President George Weah will pay a visit to the people of the county in the next couple of hours and that he is hopeful that the people's concerns will be addressed by the president. Meanwhile, Liberia's health minister, Wilhelmine Angela, says the government will pay the medical bills of patients who were forwarded to other health facilities in the county. Dr. Jala says same thing will be done for residents who sustain injuries while helping to quench the fire. Liberia is currently battling a third wave of the coronavirus, and Magibi County is the second of highly affected counties. Rita Jabwe for VOA News, Monrovia, Liberia.
More than 1.4 million Kenyans are living on food aid and facing drought and hunger, according to research conducted by Greenpeace Africa. The group says the government of Kenya should notify farmers of any looming climate danger and shield communities from hunger and loss of livelihoods. Kenya's National Drought Management Authority has warned that between the months of August and December, the country will experience severe drought. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA.
In a consolidated regional June 2021 report by the East African Community titled Food Security Status Report, food security in the region had remained stable in the past 1.5 years despite challenges of volatile food prices, desert locust impacts, and the COVID-19 pandemic. At the Kenya's coastal region in Kilifi County, one person has already died and 200,000 starving following continued drought in the area. Kenya's devolution cabinet secretary Eugene Wamalwa has warned of a looming drought in 10 counties, mostly the northeastern Kenya, that have been battling desert locust in the past 1 year. A 2020 Greenpeace Africa report shows that extreme weather events in the continent will only be more intense and unpredictable in the coming decades. Greenpeace Africa food campaigner Claire Nasike said that the government should put in place adequate plans to cushion communities from drought.
I do not believe that the government is doing enough to cushion Kenyans from the impacts of drought. Right now we have 2 million people that are at risk of food insecurities in about 12 counties.
In a report by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, temperatures and sea levels are rising, rainfall patterns are changing, and extreme weather events are becoming more intense and destructive with deadly consequences. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojembo in Milwaukee, USA.
Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the World Athletics Junior Track and Field Championship, which has been scheduled to be held in Nairobi, Kenya from August 17th to 22nd. It will now hold from August 18th and end on August 22. The one-day shift, according to World Athletics, is as a result of the impact of COVID-19 on teams traveling and logistics of moving vital equipment around the world. Teams from many countries have already arrived in the country and are booked in various athletes' hotels ahead of the championship, with Nyayo Stadium as the official training ground for various teams. Some 1,460 athletes are expected in Kenya for the five-day age group championship. World Athletics President Sebastian Coe predicts a thrilling World Under 20 championships.
We recognize, of course, under very difficult circumstances, we need systems that are going to keep the athletes safe, but we also need systems that are going to keep local communities safe. And that is really uppermost in our thinking. But I genuinely believe these championships will be spectacular. And I think it will again unearth well of talent. I really do want to thank the government of Kenya, the sports minister, but the president, who is passionate about athletics.
16 junior international women's hockey teams will be seen in action in South Africa as the International Hockey Federation, the South African Hockey Association, and the Northwest University will be hosting the first Junior Hockey Women's World Cup on African soil. The event will take place in Potchefstroom, South Africa, from the 5th to the 16th of December at the Northwest University's Astro Complex. Sheldon Rostron is the sport director of the Northwest University.
Quite a bit of history behind this. It's the first time that this event will be held on the African soil, also the first time that it will be held in South Africa. The event is a World Cup, which has never been held anywhere in the African continent, and I think it's really a great opportunity for us to showcase our hospitality.
And now to football, where President of the Confederation of African Football, CAF, Patrice Motsepe, has appealed to the private sector to partner with the organization in shaping CAF's future and support development plans. The CAF president visited Tanzania, where he met Prime Minister Kassim Majaliwa in the Tanzanian capital, Dodoma. The CAF president spoke about a need to invest at grassroots level, mainly in schools, football, and youth development infrastructure.
We must get the private sector to partner with us. And when the private sector sponsors football, partners with football, it makes good business sense.
Staying with football news, Rwandan president and Arsenal fan Paul Kagame has slammed the English Premier League club side Gunners after their defeat to Brentford on the opening day of the English Premier League season. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, August 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. And many thanks to Jackson Vunganyi for filling in during the last 2 weeks while I took some time off. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all our engineers, I'm James Butte, wishing you will have a great week.
Stay informed and up to date Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC with VOA's International Edition. Our correspondents bring you the news from around the globe. Plus, we delve into the context of the day's biggest stories with interviews with experts that place the story into context to understand why it matters. VOA's International Edition, your best source for news and information.